Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites. Another opening of
another show. Well, I am usually quite adept, if I do say so myself, at finding links between either the shows I am discussing or current trends within the world of theater. Well, this week was a bit of a challenge. I am talking about a new show about a long-gone woman who most of us have never heard of, another new piece dealing with a very old and never-to-be-forgotten subject, and finally, well, let's dish on the latest awards for the season just passed. So I guess my theme is everything old is new again. First up, I love stories about actual people who obviously had real impact during their time. All I Want is One Night is a 65-minute sort of play, sort of cabaret at 59 East 59 Theaters. And it's about a fascinating woman named Susie Solidor, who seemed to dominate Paris cultural life between the wars. "We are all sleeping with the enemy," she says at one time when she's criticized for performing for Germans. The blonde bohemian was a chanteuse in the Edith Piaf mode, a favorite model for portrait artists of the day like Picasso, Man Ray, and Francis Bacon. And she was a true entrepreneur, owning and running a nightclub in the 30s called La Vie Parisienne. You feel like you are there and then in this production, which is written by and stars Jessica Walker. Two other performers, both very fine, Rachel Austin and Alexandra Matti, portray the other characters in Solidar's life. Oh, did I mention that she was an occasional cross-dressing lesbian? This show is not for everyone, of course. The lyrics are often explicit. The narrative gets a tad confusing, and for those anti-immersive types, you may find Ms. Solidar sitting on your lap. But it is compelling and filled with melancholy about stardom, the dims, and our favorite topic, aging. "Time, would you mind standing still at least until I finish?" is a line that certainly stuck with me. And of course, there is music, 8 songs beautifully performed by the leading lady. Now, on a different note, but also looking back on close to a similar time in history, is a brand new piece called Survivors. Ralph Maranto, the director of arts and culture of the JCC in Rochester, commissioned writer Wendy Kaut to come up with a way of dramatizing the Holocaust for middle and high school students, something that could be performed in school auditoriums to supplement the usual and frankly rather dry text about the horrid event that took the lives of 6 million Jews. Kaut was supposed to dramatize the story, by the way, at a length of about 45 minutes. You do the math. Well, it seems she has succeeded. Survivors was first performed for more than 100 students in the Victor School District a month ago, and apparently was able to keep this restless texting generation enraptured. And last week, it was premiered for the greater Rochester community at the JCC, selling out 2 shows, garnering rave reviews, and personal responses such as this from a woman named Jocelyn, who wrote, "There has never been a more important time for this story. It was an unforgettable evening." This particular version tells the stories of 10 actual Rochester residents, 4 are still alive. The hope is that other communities and school districts around the country will adopt and perhaps adapt, if necessary, the piece. Survivors is definitely feeling urgent these days, yes, because of anti-Semitism making a return appearance in many countries, including Gulp, our own. And I'm sure you heard about the recent survey reporting that 41% of Americans and 66% of millennials had no idea what Auschwitz was. So Ralph Maranto, who commissioned Survivors before that report came out, before our own neo-Nazis marched in Charlottesville, well, he was nothing if not prescient. And now on to, well, an evening about other kinds of survivors, those who did not take home Tony Awards, but who will live to do another show, many shows, I assume. Now, personally, I did not find many surprises among last week's winners. I had expected Andrew Garfield and Nathan Lane to take home the acting awards for Angels in America, as well as the show itself for Best Revival. I did also think Denise Goff would and should win for supporting actress in a drama, but the Tony voters can't ever think past Laurie Metcalf whenever she takes a stage. As expected, her Three Tall Women co-star Glenda Jackson also walked off with Best Actress. Poor Alison Pill, the youngest and shortest of those in the Albee play, got nothing. Oh well, many years ahead for her. Best New Play, unsurprisingly, went to Harry Potter. This would probably have even happened in a good year, but the past season was particularly lame when it came to new dramatic works, and that can't be noted and lamented enough. The few other nominees are no longer even running. As for original musicals, no surprise that The Band's Visit took home just about everything, actor, actress, supporting actor, director, show. It's a lovely piece, but frankly, when your competition is SpongeBob and Mean Girls, well, you better win. Probably the most competitive races were in the musical revival categories. If you will recall, I said in the past that the two shows that had the most to gain and lose with the Tonys were The Band's Visit and Once on This Island. That's the little revived musical that could and did. It beat Carousel and My Fair Lady. Right up until the awards ceremony, The Band's Visit and Once on This Island were on half price lists for most performances. Now, not so much. Now, some were surprised that Katrina Link of The Band's Visit was named Best Actress in a Musical, beating big names and former winners like Jessie Mueller and Lauren Ambrose, the latter who gives a Me Too take on Eliza Doolittle. Well, she ended up a Me Too loser. Though My Fair Lady is selling out and will be at Lincoln Center a good long time, so no tears necessary there. The theme of finding and celebrating the loser within was introduced in the opening number of the CBS broadcast by a pair of delightful hosts, Josh Groban and Sarah Bareilles. Their clever duets and banter, the fact that speeches were either kept short or eliminated, just showing clips of some of the tech winners, and the decision not even to try to find a creative way of showing the drama nominees, well, I think it made it one of the better Tony shows. And Jill, even the ratings went up.
Yeah, I was absolutely delighted in a really good way by the, you know, I was just really pleasantly pleased with the with the opening, with their performance. It was joyous. It was everything that you want in a theater. It wasn't over, it was the magic somehow for that brief shining moment. And then the minute, this is my view. And so your show, my view. Anyway, the first person who accepted an award, you know, said things that really meant a lot to him, but you could just feel that he lost the bigger room at that. He had his room at the Radio City room, but I'm not sure that he had the, you know, young kid in Kansas room.
That's interesting. They did start with, surprisingly, with the Best Actor Award and Garfield, and he gave a very moving speech. Did it scare off people who thought, oh no, it's going to be a whole nother night of this?
Unclear, but I'm quite sensitive to that simply because in my view, the better we are about embracing everything and bringing whatever it is, whether it's bringing Broadway, bringing you know, stop segmenting it. It's been there for a long, long time, which means there are people who have been there for a long, long time.
That's
You know, so
well, that's funny. That's how it started, and it ended, of course, on a controversial note. But Robert De Niro got up, and
you know, and again, that's
a word about Trump, and you know, was that necessary? Is that the right place?
Unclear, you know, but it certainly resonates. This is the tricky bit. It resonates with that audience. So for that reason, you do it. But I'm again, and this is just me. If you've already got people who agree with something, they're not your they don't need more reinforcement. What you need are the people who don't. Is that the best way to convey that to them?
You know, I think the truth is with the Tony broadcast, it's usually beautifully done. Last year was kind of a sour one. Kevin Spacey was a host before Kevin Spacey, you know, was discarded, right. Whatever, yeah. But that was kind of a sour one for a lot of reasons. Anyway, this had a very upbeat, nice, joyful feel to it most of the time. But, you know, the Tony Awards are only ever going to get a certain number of people. How many people even know what a Broadway show is? How many people will ever go to a Broadway show? They just not interested in a broadcast like that. So it basically is done for folks like us, you know, who appreciate those things. And they tried, I think, to make it more.
I don't know. Can I just interject for one more second and say the following? Way back in the day, before you were born, before I was born, there was this thing called showbiz. And there was this excitement that you wanted to go, you know, you wanted to go to Broadway. And there's only one way. A lot of the people that are vaunted and enshrined in the halls of fame were not born in New York City.
Right.
And so they had to know about it somehow.
Well, one nice thing now is that so many of these shows travel. I guess they always did. Certainly a show like My Fair Lady traveled. And, you know, we all saw those musicals growing up in other cities. But a lot of these shows now, Fun Home is now playing them all around the country. And so many of these. And that's, so I don't know if that's taken away the some of the sparkle that they say, oh, yeah, well, I saw that last year. Even Hamilton is playing in every city now. So, you know, that makes it more accessible, maybe, that they know these shows or they have a chance of actually seeing these shows.
You probably still want to see it in the big place. You still, this is the great thing. You see, you are introduced to it, and then you go and you see it in the ultimate venue.
And yeah, you do, and there is nothing like it. And I have to say, almost every time I go to these shows, even a show, Carousel is not doing very well. But, you know, it's a full audience, and they seem to love it. Most of these theaters, I don't know what people are paying. They're probably not paying full prices, but they are there. And it just amazes me. Though I will say it's going to be a slow summer. We're not going to see new Broadway shows opening during the summer, and a number of them are closing. Boys, what's it called? Boys in the Band? The Boys in the Band. It's only on for like 2 months, very short run. It was a star-studded anniversary performance. But so it's a respite we have here. But great time to go to these, to go to Rochester, a great time to go to Off-Broadway. All these little houses are doing interesting things. Matter of fact, I'm seeing three this week that I'll be talking about with you next week.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.